Live from Los Angeles, this is LA Talk Radio, broadcasting for the seventh year.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Lolo, only on LA Talk Radio.
Amazing instrument, and has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro, and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. I have a great show for you tonight. There's so many great guitarists in this room. It's just mind-boggling. And the really cool thing about it, which makes one of the highlights of doing this show, is they're great guitarists and they're great friends. And I'm just so happy to have all these people here. My guest tonight, I'm just going to go right down the line. There's a bunch of people here, is Jim Kimo West. And he's been on several times. And he had sent me this album a little while ago that he had just done a collaboration with him and Ken Emerson. And it's called Slackers in Paradise. It's a great name for an album. And there's some amazing guitar playing on this. We'll play a clip in a minute and we'll get right into it. But welcome to the show, both of you guys. It's really great to have you
Mahalo,
here.
Mahalo, Jeff. Thank you so much.
Nice to be here.
And my guest host is Don Alder, who was on last week. And I hope you've recovered from NAMM.
Good to see you again. Yeah, yeah. Throat thrash and all the rest. And man, a tough show. It was great, though.
It was a lot of fun. Also here, J.P. Durand and Lisa Carbe from Carbe and Durand, and most also from Incendio. It's great to have you guys here, too. Dear friends, I've known him for years and years and years. It's good to have you here. And then a special guest, my good friend that we did the punk show on, or the two punk shows, Pat DiPuccio showed up, and it's great to have Pat here.
Good to be here.
Pat's going to learn about different tunings tonight. He's going to do different tunings in a punk style. I think this is a new thing. Anyway, let me start out with the title song of the album, Slackers in Paradise, to kind of give you an idea of what's happening with Ken and Jim, what they're doing on this album. It's a great album. I recommend it. But their tone and just the playing is just phenomenal. So here, take a listen. Some great stuff, and just the way we were talking a little bit before the show is how intuitive they play together. They just know they complement each other when they're playing, and it's an interesting mixture of styles. Though, you know, both have a similar background, it's interesting technique wise, and we're going to get a little bit into each of the playing and the tunings and stuff. But anyway, welcome again on the show. Real quick, though, I want to get a little bit into the background, Ken, where your roots are and where, how you got about what came, where do you get to this point in your guitar playing?
From the very beginning? My dad was a pilot for the U.S. Navy, and he brought a guitar back from Japan. This is around 1960, I guess. Mm-hmm. And there are five of us kids, you know. I'm right in the middle. And, you know, we just all fought over him, man. It was like it was something that came naturally, strings, you know. And so, you know, I started playing ukulele first because my hands were small. I was like 7 years mm-hmm. old. And my mom played uke because it was a popular instrument back in the 30s, you know, and 40s. And so I sort of inherited that as my first guitar. She played at the 1939 World's Fair exhibition at Treasure Island, San Francisco.
Oh, wow.
With her twin sister. That was her big gig. Yeah. Anyway, so we you know, so my dad brought a couple more guitars back, but he was a record collector, and he was into world music, you know, even back then, and he had a great collection of records. So I grew up with music. That's what really helped shape me as a musician, you know, and hearing all those different styles. So, you know, the folk era was happening, mm-hmm. you know. So my older brother and sister were doing all the Dylan stuff. But that was the key because, you know, they were starting to learn how to finger pick because, you know, everybody played Freight Train or, you know, one of those type of tunes. And I'm really grateful for that because if I'd have picked it up later when I got, you know, the Beatles hit, everything changed. You know, everybody wanted an electric guitar after that. So I had that acoustic, you know, beginning with playing.
So your early influence was folk.
Yeah, yeah, the folk and the finger picking. And I figured it out right away for some reason, you know. In fact, my brother used to get mad at me, like the punk did it before him, but...
Where was this? What city
were we? We were living in Monterey, California then. Okay. Yeah. From the Bay Area. And so, you know, I played a lot of that stuff. And then, well, you know, the Beatles, man, it just changed everything. Well, there was the surf thing, too, though. You know, that was going along parallel with the folk thing was, you know, that was the electric guitar sound, the Ventures and all that stuff.
The Ventures, mm-hmm. yeah.
You know, we were all into that. Of course, I lived near the beach, so... And, but, you know, the Beatles just seemed to change everything. And then, of course, you know, just music in general, just we were just barraged by such great music all the time, you know. And I loved the Birds and, you know. But I kept the acoustic thing I always had, and I'm real grateful for that. Because, you know, both Kimo and I, we both rock out electric mm-hmm, guitars. Mm-hmm. But we have this, you know, especially with this kind of music we're doing now, it's a really relaxing place to go to play music. And you can still get your licks in, but it's a whole different world.
Well, one thing I did notice in your playing is a blues influence. You were talking about that the yeah. Hawaiian music had a blues influence. But I mean, I think there's a lot of blues in you that comes out in the playing.
Well, yeah, there's blues in me, but... you know, the thing about the slide is it's like, you know, it's such an expressive instrument. You can pretty much get away with a lot of nonsense chords and single notes. But the blues, you know, it's just a great way to express yourself on a slide.
Now, real quick, what is your tuning right now? What are you using?
Well, I got this fake Weisenborn here, the travel guitar. And I'm using a tarot patch, we call it. It's an open G. So that's G, a D, G, D, G, B, and a D. And then you can go variations of that. You can drop the G string down a half step mm-hmm. to F sharp. You get a major seventh. Or you can tune up the middle D up to E, and you get a six tuning. That's really, really great for, you know, if you only have a six string lap steel, say, and you're learning. Well, you can do all this country stuff, you know, with an open G like that, and a Hawaiian, too. But if you tune up, you just tune that one string up, all of a sudden the voice is like... more of a swing or more of a Hawaiian type of thing. you know.
It's like somebody brought a bunch of palm trees in.
Yeah. It's so funny how that style really makes you feel like in Hawaii. But Keith, I got a question for you. So I'm noticing that on your right hand, you're using the Pro Pix, which typically kind of only allow you one direction. Is that just your particular style, or is that kind of...
I play a lot of national guitars, resonators.
Right.
And to really get the volume and the tone out of them, you almost have to wear finger picks unless you've got, you know, bionic fingernails, I guess.
Fair enough.
He was demonstrating before, because I used to use them on banjo, and when you try to flail, I always get them caught.
Yeah,
but
really.
He show him a little bit of the triplet things you're doing. You're pretty agile.
There's a lot of... one of my heroes was Saul Ho'opi'i, this guy that played in the 20s and 30s, an incredible player. And he played a lot of jazz during the jazz era. And he didn't invent this technique, but he certainly perfected it. It's called triplets, where you pick with your thumb first, and then your index finger, and then your third finger. But if you do that, you can get a circular pattern going... really get some, you know, rapid staccato action going there. And then I've taken that and to the second string, so. Or, you know, three of them. Add a slant in there and change the chord. Having finger picks, you have to almost have them to do those techniques.
One thing Ken does, which is kind of interesting, and he kind of mixes the slack key thing with the steel, and that's kind of, you just show him some of that. Basically, it's like with slack key, you know, it's a very simple music. You often have this alternating bass. Very simple kind of 1-5 bass thing.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of steel guitar, that's really just a melodic instrument, and they usually have to have some kind of background, rhythmic background.
Most
playing,
steel guitars, like especially pedal steel, they don't accompany themselves with the bass notes and play syncopated style. It's all chords and single notes. A lot of dobros that too. But in the slack key, like you said, you know,
Jim, what is it that musically, what's happening musically that gives it that Hawaiian feel? Because you know you go to China, have a distinct sound there.
Yeah, well, you know, it's there's certain little conventions, little things that are very common in Hawaiian music. Of course, the feel is a big part of it. You know, that's a very relaxing kind of a languid kind of a feel with the Hawaiian music. But sometimes you'll have these little conventions, little riffs that are very Hawaiian. Like this is a very we teach this and we do workshops. Very, all these little riffs, you know, like.
Yeah.
Or things like this, like. You know, it's just simple stuff, but it's so. It just really feels like Hawaii.
It's got a voice to it.
Yeah.
It's got a character. It's beautiful, yeah.
And like when he does that hammer on, you know, at the bottom there, that's also a steel guitar technique.
Yeah, and they just. So essentially, what everybody should know is that steel guitar came from slack key. What happened slack key started in Hawaii in the 1830s. This is before the blues. And people had their guitars in these open tunings, not just G, but many different open tunings. A lot of the families, you know, had their own tunings. So around the turn of the century, there's a young guy named Joseph Keikuku, and he discovered
that... He dropped something on his comb.
They say he dropped his comb on his guitar that made this
That Hawaiian noise.
And eventually, you know, this young guy figured out he could play the guitar with his comb, but then eventually he got a nice machined piece of steel and he developed the steel guitar sound. So steel guitar comes from slack key, so a lot of the slack key...
Yeah, but the open tuning was the key to it because he had a chord there.
Exactly.
If you went straight across in Spanish tuning, that doesn't really say much.
Yeah.
You know, but when you have the is because the steel, if you take the bar, this is the cool thing about lap steel, dobro, and non-pedal steel playing. You have to manipulate this bar. That's the art, you know, most of the art of it is manipulating the bar. That's all slant chords, you know?
Right.
And the pedal steel took all that away. If you ever notice pedal steel players, even the greatest
footwork, sir.
They never slant the bar
across the frets. You know, point straight across.
They never slant the bar because they just use a pedal to create those tones.
Yeah,
you know,
it's an amazing instrument.
Yeah. So with lap steel, it's quite difficult. You know.
Yes. Yeah. Now you've also got the bridge pins on there, the power pins.
Yeah.
So you found that they worked.
You know, these are an interesting thing. I discovered these. The gentleman who makes them lives out in Marina Del Rey. He actually lives on his boat. But he came up with this idea for these pins, and they basically replace the end pins on guitars. You know, those little pegs that pop in your bridge that you're always losing when you go to change your strings. You know, it's like, where'd that thing go, man? I can't find it. I got to change my strings. Yeah. You know, so he had this idea of like creating these little brass pins that go through the actual bridge, and they're fastened from inside with a little nut. But the pin itself is, you know, it's like about 3/4 inch long, but it's got a little slot. So the string slides into that slot, and then the ball end of the string just tucks up inside the pin. So it makes changing strings very easy, and it just works great. And it's like, oh, that's so great, because I just getting tired of those old bridge pins, you know.
Jim, hold that up for a second.
Yeah.
It's nice because they have a low profile, so when your palms are not.
Yes. They don't mess with your. They're very low, and they don't. You know, they're no higher than the actual bridge saddle.
Yeah.
So, and you know, I was leery of it at first. So I recorded my guitar with the regular pins, and then I had these put in, and I recorded again, and it certainly didn't sound any worse, and it might have sounded a little bit better. I don't know, but you know.
But the gain is ergonomic, kind of. Now, the other thing I noticed you got going on, I'm suspecting, is that when you're traveling to different locations, you're dealing with different humidity. You have to do truss rod adjustments.
So you're leaving your cap off. Yeah. Oh yeah, my guitars have it.
I don't have that problem.
Yeah, I know.
You know, it just varies. Sometimes the guitar will be. Sometimes I don't have to adjust it hardly at all. And every once in a while, especially going back and forth to Hawaii, you know, with the humidity and and just being, you know, I check my guitar, you know, in a Calton case, and, you know, of course it's going to be freezing cold in there, and, you know, who knows. But sometimes I'll get to Hawaii, I'll get to Hawaii, and because of the humidity and the change in temperature and everything, it'll be a little bit too tight, so I'll loosen it off a little bit, you know, and then I'll come back to the mainland, and then it's like, oh, wait a minute, that doesn't feel quite right. Just one, and I'm not talking about much, but maybe just a quarter of a turn at the most, you know, just a tiny bit can make a huge difference, you know.
So the cap stays off?
The cap stays off because it's just way easier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
And it's keeping, you know, slacking to a new level, slacking the neck.
Of all the guys that you are bringing up, the techniques you're bringing up are bringing up so many different interesting people. So for the purpose of the people that are listening, I mean, I would think of Bob Wills and the Texas Playboys, or any of a number of Hawaiian guys, I think, or even Speedy West. There's so many. Mm-hmm. When you think of the different techniques, who were the guys that really turned you on to these, like one or two of the key people that might have influenced you to go this way?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, you listen to Speedy, it's like, it's crazy stuff. Alvino Ray, a lot of those guys.
He's the guy that did all the stuff for Bing Crosby? Because I know Bing Crosby was a tremendous actor.
He had the talking guitar. He was before wah-wah pedals. Wow. They were all into doing that stuff, you know, Les Paul, all that novelty. A lot of it was novelty music, you know, because it was, you know, swing-based, jazz-based, I guess, a lot of it, really.
Mm-hmm. Should we hear something?
Yeah, I want to play some. I'm going to ask you what would be the best. I want to talk a little bit about how you guys tune, because you're using different tunings and playing together.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of which of the songs would be the best. Can you give me a suggestion of...
I'm wondering if
I can't pronounce them really good. Like, would Ilohana Kahi?
Why don't we do the
would that be?
Why don't we play the polka, you know?
The Slack Key Polka? Well, let's see. I know I was in open G on that one.
It's a pretty cool arrangement.
I'll play Slacky. Let's play that.
Yeah, I don't know if we were in different tunings on that or not. I can't remember. That one might have been similar tunings. I know, for example, on number 15, Mahia. I know I was a couple of these tunes. I remember I capoed very high. You know, like Ken might be in open G. And so as an open G tuning, like we were talking about, maybe on his standard guitar, and then I would use what they call drop C, which is essentially taking this open G, just like Ken described before, and I'm lowering the low D down to C. In that case, you have to actually fret a C chord. But what's cool is if he's in the key of G and I capo way up here, then I'm in the key of G now playing right. This. So you get a wide yeah. spread in the guitars, a wide range of different. So we did that on a number of songs.
Yeah, I guess you noticed that there was a lot of jazz and blues and a lot of the Hawaiian sounding stuff. But we did a couple of things that are like the Aukealoa one.
Track three.
Totally different. But I think he's capoed up on that.
Yeah, let's try playing that one because I know I capoed up for that.
That's
and played
more of
some,
a contemporary thing.
Yeah,
okay, let's take a listen to
some of that. Yeah, that would be good.
Now, this is interesting. We got to break this down a little bit.
I'm not sure what he was in.
Now, this I know besides playing the slide, the steel, you were playing regular, you play regular guitar too,
yeah.
And this is a good example of that. And you got to tell me who's playing what, because those real high little
yeah.
trills
so
are
that's
scammerons.
What we were talking about. I'm not sure what tune he was in. I believe I was in an open D.
Yeah, he was in open D, and I was in open G, but capoed to the 7th fret, you know, so you get a very kind of a ting.
Yeah. Yeah, so I was holding the bottom.
So what's that little... ornamentation you're doing up there? You're doing like a hammer on.
Oh, they're just, you know, yeah. Well, there's this. I guess I was using some hammer ons. I don't know.
Yeah, just kind of weaving it around my.
That's kind of
and a lot of this kind of, you know, triplet each time. or...
So you're doing that basic finger picking on the first time?
Yeah.
Because it's really amazing how you guys are both... how you get the blend, what you're doing. You're in different parts of the guitar, but what you're playing complements. It sounds like one huge big guy.
Yeah.
Like many hands. But it blends so well.
Yeah. It's just, well, like you say, we like to... and when we were performing live a lot, even when we're sort of in uncharted territory, we will often... if one of us is playing low, the other is up high, and we'll kind of weave around, and maybe then all of a sudden just kind of start playing in the low registers, and he'll be up high. And mm-hmm. We just kind of do that naturally when we play live, anyway. Just because, you know, there's nothing worse than just two or three guitars all in the same register playing.
Oh, yeah.
It becomes kind of just like mud, you know.
But it's a nice counterpoint that's going on between them. Now you were using your Taylor, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And then what were you using on that cut?
Probably your Taylor, right? Or were you using your?
No, I might have done that on the Breedlove.
He had a Breedlove.
I did a couple on the Breedlove.
It's sort of a custom Ken Emerson model.
they did a calendar series. I'm not sure if they still do. It was like all Koa.
It's a Koa.
The Koa guitar.
But live, he often uses this Taylor 4 series there that he's had for years. So
yeah, that's the.
Yeah,
main
usually thing, we're both playing our Taylors.
Actually, grab the Taylor and just do a little bit. That's to show him how you. Because I want to kind of demonstrate that interplay between you.
Yeah. Well, he's in. That's in. You got that in G or?
Let's see what I'm in.
Well, it's okay. We can. I can still. Just whatever key you're in, I'll play to.
And you're still you going to use the finger picks on
well,
that?
Well, maybe I'll take them off. I do a lot of playing without them.
You're in G, right? So
after you guys do this, maybe we can get Jim. Hey, Jim.
Yeah.
Oh, right over here.
Oh,
yeah. So after you guys do this, it'd be nice to get a bit of your history because we kind of missed that.
Well,
you want to do a Hop a Holly maybe?
Yeah, we can do that. I'm not playing a lot of high stuff on that, but I am a little bit, you know. But we'll just play a little bit of something that's got.
Well, while he's tuning, give us a little bit of your background.
Yeah, well, my background is interesting. When Cam was talking about his, you know, my first guitar influence. Again, was the folk influence, because I had an older brother who was 10 years older than me, and he played, you know, he was into the folk music of the day. And that was the first, you know, music that, you know, he played that around the house on his guitar. And so when I finally, I think I picked up his old guitar, it had like 3 strings on it, and he thought, oh, it's interesting. So he went and got me a set of strings, which was very nice of him, and a book, you know, and a capo, and I think, you know, just sort of set me up, and it was like, after that, it was all over, but all his records that I heard were all folk records, so the first thing I learned how to do was finger picking. Can I say a tuner?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was sort of
a similar thing.
We're
the same age, too.
So, you know, the thing is, we both kind of came, were influenced by that folk thing, and we picked up the finger picking thing from the folk records.
Where were you brought up?
When I first started playing guitar, I was in living in Florida. I was born in Toronto, but my family moved to Florida when I was very young, and that's where I started playing guitar. I was in Florida.
Smart Canadians, especially in the wintertime, around February.
Yeah, my parents had enough of the cold, so they were like, "Let's go somewhere warm."
It's funny because I had a friend living there. Actually, he was my girlfriend's father, and he invited me over to meet him because he wanted to check out the boyfriend, right? And he had a little place in Maui, Malaya Bay, outlooking Malakini, right on the water, the condos. But when I first got there, he took me to his back porch. It was a beautiful sunny night. The ocean was calm, and he said, "Don, welcome to my lanai." And I said, "Marshall, your lanai is really great." And he goes, "Lanai means bathroom. Lanai means back veranda." He might have just been kidding me. So does Lanai mean bathroom?
Lua is what they call in Hawaii. Lua. Well, lua means a pit, like a pit in the ground. So lua is the bathroom.
Lanai.
Yeah, it's like when I'm in Canada. There, it's like, oh, let's get some tacos. It's like tacos. No, they're tacos.
Tacos. Yeah.
Let's
get some tacos. Tomatoes.
We did an old ragtimey thing. We got a friend here named Rick Kuna. You know Rick?
I haven't met him, but I know him.
Yeah, and his grandfather wrote this song. It was a big hit. It was written in 1912.
Just play a little bit of it or whatever.
Yeah, so this is called Hoppa Holly Hula Girl. And he's tuned, I don't know any tunes.
I'm in the drop C.
So he's in drop C, and then I'm tuned to regular tune.
Standard tuning, you're on that tune. One, yeah, right.
So here, here's the blend here.
We just need the papaya and the pineapples and we'd be rocking.
Yeah, Hawaiian music, you know, it just kind of went along with all the popular music of America back through the all the eras.
Yeah, the original slack key was a whole different thing. The old style slack key was a whole different thing. Ken might even play a little bit of that, sort of an example. But once popular music came to Hawaii via radio and records and radio, I guess, in those days, then Hawaiian music got influenced by whatever was popular on the mainland. So that started off.
Wasn't the, or you had said the original was Spanish based because they had brought the guitars over?
Yeah, the Mexican cowboys did, the vaqueros. Right. You know, they were the first ones.
Right, so the first music that a lot of the Hawaiians heard was the Spanish. Well, the vaqueros probably playing around the campfire at night, you know. They used to play not only just for enjoyment, but it also used to, they say it, said it would soothe the cattle. You know, the cattle would get calm when the guys, the vaqueros, would play their guitars. And so it was nice to keep the cattle calm because, you know, cattle are very, you know, they one little disturbance can make them all just bolt and stampede and everything. So the cowboys would, you know, play their guitars. You know, and I think the Hawaiians learned that from the cowboys. They play their guitars, and
there's a lot of nice
cattle
songs that have that influence in it. There's a thing called the Paniolo. That's the Hawaiian cowboy. There's a whole cult subculture in Hawaii from those guys, and they're the ones that their music, or the songs. Mm-hmm. Maybe we could play one of those things.
Yeah, it's an interesting history. So that really started, slack key itself started around the 1830s, which is a long time ago. So, what key are you going to play in there, buddy? Thank you. pretty good for a first time, bro.
The old campfire, that was called Amaukaukaukaulili. Song about the lariat, but the Hawaiian songs, when they speak of things, they have a whole other meaning to things, which is very cool. It's called the kaona. That's something that's...
A lot of Hawaiian lyrics have this kaona, and it's basically a hidden meaning. It's a double meaning, you know, so that's there's a lot of interesting interpretation. Sometimes, I remember when I was first learning Hawaiian music, I was taking great pride in learning some of these songs and singing them, you know, and it's like, well, why do they always start laughing when I sing that song? You know, as they're laughing because the lyrics have this meaning that's like, you know, not, it's always something about sex or something, you know. So it's such a beautiful song, Mauna Loa. Oh, yes. Lovely song. And they're all the old timers are laughing, you know, like, oh, yeah, that's a dirty song. What are you talking about?
And, it's an important point, I think, to bring up for listeners, if I may go off tangentially for just a second. A few weeks ago, I was watching a video with Joe Bonamassa, and he was going through different guitars, and he was talking about rolling off the volume and not striking the string so hard. And the it's obvious there's a lot of guitar players in the room, and we all kind of know that. And I thought it was such an important point to bring up, you know, do you have the volume full on all the way? How hard do you pick attack, letting the note bloom and really giving it? And I'm hoping that the microphones in here convey to your listeners the incredible craft, and actually Don also plays so beautifully this way, and Lisa too, of just really finding a way to strike the string in a way that you really get a beautiful resonance out of it. The fact that they're playing these nice tailors doesn't hurt at all, but your technique is immaculate. It's not hurried, and it's about bringing the sound for kind of drawing it forward rather than striking and just kind of getting a more like, almost like, you know, the Pete Townsend thing is so cool when you're gonna play Pinball Wizard and all that. But this other approach is so forcefully, it's still delicate. I wonder if you can speak a little bit to right hand technique and some of the you picked up that up from folk, but clearly this is a very developed refinement you guys have.
Well, also it's actually a very big part of slack key. Slack key is, you know, in its oldest form is what they call nahi nahi, and it, I mean it's a term that can mean sweet or gentle, and it's also applied to a voice or somebody's speaking voice or something. But this nahi nahi element is something that's inherent to slack key, you know. And of course nowadays there's a lot of guys who do a lot of just, you know, kind of crazy, you know, they're like kind of overhand, you know, a lot of trick stuff, but, you know, because it's become entertainment. But in its oldest form it was never entertainment. That's right. It was played at home, it was a family music, it was played very soothingly and quietly.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's call Wahine tuning. This is that regular open G. We talked about flattening the G string,
right? But I think that's sort of an inherent quality to the old style slack key, is that, you know, it's the soft, gentle sound, and it's actually part of Hawaiian culture, really. People are not forceful. People are gentle there in Hawaii. It's part of Hawaiian culture, you know, to be gentle and to be smooth. You know?
Show them kind of a version of like a...
Yeah, that's a G Wahine tuning.
G.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Say, Jim or Keith, I'm just curious how...
Oh, Ken. Not Keith.
Oh, Keith. Yeah, Ken.
Keith so Emerson was a...
yeah.
Not related, unfortunately.
It's Nam. Tired from Nam. So how does... When you look at the dancers and they're telling a story, how does it intertwine with the music? Like in Spain, it looks like the dancers kind of drive how the music goes. How does that intertwine in
That's a good question because, you know, hula is such a huge part of Hawaiian music. Now, when we're playing instrumental, of course, there's no hula because they have to dance to a lyric, you know, to words because they're interpreting the words with their hands. Yeah. So, but we like to incorporate hula in our shows because it's just such a beautiful art form, you know, and it adds another dimension to the show. So generally with the way it works with Hawaiian music and hula is, you know, there's certain forms where oftentimes verses are done twice, and there's always, the last verse is always haina ia mai ana kapuana, so on and so on, that now I've told my story. It's like a recap verse, you know. So there are certain conventions. So we tend to be on the same page with the dancers, as long as we, you know the song they're dancing, of course. And you don't want to mess up and sing the wrong verse at the wrong time. You want to make sure you sing the right verse and everything. But
yeah, a friend of mine, you ever heard of Will Bernard? Yeah. He's a really good jazz guitar player. He lives in New York now. But he's funny. He's going, hey, Ken, is that what they always do that, you know, the vamp thing? And I said, well, it gives the dancers time to get set for the next set of words that they're going to dance to. You know, so it sort of sets up the verse.
It has a function. Yes. It's not just ornamental.
Yeah, I remember asking Bill Tapio once. Bill Tapio was a famous ukulelist, jazz guitarist who I was lucky enough to know. I met him when he was 96, and I think he passed away at age 103. But I remember asking him, where did that musical vamp, you know? Where did that come from? And he was like, well, I don't know. He could never pin it down. He was 100 years old and he didn't know where it came from. Yeah. But essentially, like Ken said, it fulfills that you can just keep vamping until they're ready. And oftentimes the dancers will what they call kahea. And kahea means call. And what'll happen, you'll hear this a lot in Hawaiian music, the dancer will kahea or call out the first word of the verse just before the verse starts, and then you know you're ready to start with the verse. You know they'll go haina, okay, haina ia mai ana kapuana, you know. So there's an interaction there, and sometimes it works reverse way. It just depends on who knows the song better. Often sometimes the musicians will kahea for the dancers, but that just lets them know what verse is coming up, and that's sort of mm-hmm. one of the common interactions. And the vamp, you know, you could just keep going until they're ready. You know. Maybe they're walking out for the first verse, you know, and getting set to dance, you know. You go, oh, hey, oh, you know. And then you can go into the, and then they know where it starts. So there's, you know, that's sort of how the hula works with Hawaiian music.
Now, what I want to do real quick I want to break down the piece that you just did to show what you guys are doing. Mm-hmm. So what I want to do is have you play the part you were playing, because you were doing some interesting stuff. And I'm talking to Ken, mm-hmm. where you're, first of all, you're using the finger picks,
yeah.
which affects the sound and what you're doing. And then what I want to do is, so show a little bit of what you're doing in the piece, and then have Jim show what he's doing, because it's interesting to see actually what they're playing separately and then see how it fits together.
A little bit of what we just played?
Yeah, I'm thinking of doing is go ahead and play like you were, play it again, and I'll pull the faders down and talk over it and say basically which one, what's going on. Okay?
Gotcha. Okay, yeah.
Way you can, you know, it's kind of hard to just play, because you're playing off of each other, and that's a big part of it, too. So.
Yeah, we weren't really playing anything structured. We're just sort of jamming. But one thing I can say is I'm in regular G tuning, and he was in what they call G wahine, where they take the G string down to F sharp to create a major seventh chord.
It's a great sound. That's
they're almost the exact same tuning, you know?
Okay, so I'm going to start. I'm going to bring your fader down and have him play, and then I'll flip it.
Gotcha.
Okay, so go ahead and just do what you were doing just before.
Okay.
that's Jim's guitar. And then here's Ken. And then both of them together. And you can hear the dynamic. He's playing really light right now. And then here's Ken. And both together.
For a beer.
Okay, well, listen, we're almost out of time, but I want to just get through a little bit and mention, first of all, for Jim, www.jimkimowest.com. And you can find, should they go to your Kenton, or is there a music? Kenton?
On Facebook.
Kenton Emerson. And
full name.
And you can. Get more. That's where he posts what everything that they're doing and stuff, and they're playing everywhere. The album is, where did my album go? It's Slackers in Paradise, and it's available everywhere. And we were talking just before the show about this. It's on vinyl, so all you audiophile guys that are crazy about vinyl,
the vinyl sounds good. It's
you can get Jim and Ken in analog. He's available in analog and digital. So
yeah, it's a lovely gatefold spread too. So when it opens up, it looks like the CD, only bigger. It's a really lovely spread.
All I'm going to say is the cover is what I used on the promo for this morning. But you have to get the CD to see the inside picture, which is very. Not going to give it away. No spoilers. But
Ken, you shouldn't have worn that G string.
But anyway, it's available everywhere. It's a great album. And I can't recommend it. I mean, for tone and just the little things that they're doing, and like JP was saying, the subtlety.
Yeah, we used a lot of vintage guitars. I used my 1928 National Tricone.
Nice.
And
nice.
Mike G's on that. He used a great
mic. But I usually try and put some kind of tubes in the circuit somewhere. So I think I used a tube mic on that.
But he really captured the sound. The
tone, your tone on all of it's just really sweet.
Where
really
did you record
sweet.
It here?
I have a studio at home. I record all my there were a few tracks that Ken did his basic parts on Kauai, on a few of the songs, and then we did the other tracks here. But mostly it was recorded and mixed at my studio. I just did it at my.
And place. you were using primarily the Taylors, or did you use anything else?
Yeah, I used a Martin D18 on a couple things, and of course. The Deering six-string banjo on the Slack Key Polka. That's in the polka.
And that opening that I was playing, I think that was you on that banjo, right?
Yes, that's right. That was the banjo was on that as well. And then I did use my baritone on that song, on a couple songs. That's the baritone that's sitting there, the Tacoma baritone. A few different things, ukuleles and, this and that. But mostly I think it was the Taylors, either this one or my other one, which is almost the same guitar, just a little older. But these are essentially Taylor 514s, and they're just cedar and mahogany, so they're kind of a nice, mellow sound.
What model number is yours?
I believe it's a 414.
Yeah, I think it's a 414.
Is that mahogany?
It's a smaller body, yeah.
It's spruce and mahogany?
It's mahogany,
mahogany and spruce, yeah.
Okay. And that's just been a workhorse of a guitar. It's been abused severely, and it just stays in tune and plays great, so I can't say enough about that guitar.
I have a question for you, because you both did a tour, correct?
Yeah, well, we've been playing shows out supporting the record as much as we can.
You know, do you bring a lot of guitars with you?
No, that's the problem. You know, especially if we're if we play shows in Hawaii, like our first series of shows when we first released the album, they were all in Hawaii. So, you know, traveling with guitars, that's a good question because it's so hard nowadays to travel with multiple guitars, as Don knows. I know because you bring a harp guitar too.
Yeah,
you,
harp and baritone. But yeah. I'm trying to make I'm making guitars live in different places now.
So yeah, that's the way to do it. Ken does that too. Yeah. He plants guitars in certain places so he can just
buries them in little secret places.
Yes. But, you know, traveling with a lot of guitars is rough. And the other factor about that, I'll just take this one guitar, but then we'll do a set, and I've got all these different tunings. So we have to sort of structure the set and figure out, okay, I got to switch to C major. I'm going to have to change four strings. You got to tell a story, or we're going to have to tell a story while we're doing that. And,
I've got a solution for you.
Oh, yeah?
It's actually, I found it in Germany. I just put it on a guitar there, and it works. When it works, it's awesome.
Is it the robotic thing?
It's the Tronical Tuner, yeah.
Oh, I haven't tried that.
And you just store all your different tunings. You just click a button. And
so you've tried it.
It works, yeah. It works really, really well.
The robotic tuners, Ken, what do you think of that? They would look good on your national.
Yeah, that's like Frankenstein meeting a robot or something. Well, thanks for having us on.
No, it's a pleasure. Now, I was going to take us out but with a song, but I'm wondering if you guys want to do something to take us out, or would you rather...
we can do that. Sure, yeah. We could do something off the record.
Yeah, but I mean, it's so much fun hearing you play live. It's just too cool.
Well, sure, yeah. Let's do the... You want to do the Mango song? That'd be
sure.
Great. That's easy because we're going to write two.
We're in a
laid back
mood. There is up tempo stuff on the record, of course.
Oh, no, the whole album. There's all sorts of cool little things. And I recommend the silent movie Slacky. That's a great that's one of my favorites.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Okay, well, everybody, have a great week. Oh, first of all, donalder.com. Don, check out what he's doing. CarbeAndDuran.com for Carbe and Duran. Pooch, the Condors, if I'm correct, .com for Pooch's band. It's great to have all you guys here. It's really an honor, and I'm glad to finally have Don as a guest host.
He was on last week
as a guest, and we'll have more of him too. Have all you guys, of these guys will be back. So everybody have a great week, and we'll leave you with the Mango song.
All right.
Mango season.